Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, the podcast where we talk about musicals with people who love musicals. I am your host, Zane C. Weber. Here with me are...
Julie Eisentrager.
And...
It's me, KB.
And I don't know why you're looking at me.
I think, like, we always say people who love musicals, but I think it's been proven, perhaps, that I don't love...
But I love musicals, and I'm always here.
Yeah, why are you here then, Julie?
No, stay, please.
We have like also brought people who aren't necessarily musical lovers into the musical lovers fold.
Welcome to the fold.
And our guest this week has a history with musicals. Taught Me Everything I Know. The first time that our guest came onto the show,
yeah,
she brought a French Revolutionary musical that she despised, and we spoke about it for an hour and 40 minutes.
That's still the record, I think.
Les Mis, I don't think Les Mis is. I think Shrek has beaten
Shrek might have been, yes.
How?
I think Shrek was like an hour and 48 minutes long.
But this week we have none other than Kim Brown.
Hello, everybody.
Here to talk about The Scarlet Pimpernel, a French Revolutionary musical.
I'm so excited. I feel like I'm being put in a corner and I have a niche musical thing now. But it's,
I will say we let the guest pick the musical.
Well, yes, this. And I'm glad I got invited back after the fun times we had with Les Mis.
It's that okay.
Very gracious
you know
of you all.
I still, like, I like Les Mis. I'm going to put it out there. I like Les Mis.
I have
no hard feelings against Kim Brown for that episode.
No, we share initials, Kim Brown. Yes. We're always going to be friends.
Exactly. Oh. And I love a lot about Les Mis, but we're not here to talk about that.
We are going to talk about you before we talk about
goodness.
The Scarlet Pimpernel. We have a Getting to Know You quiz, and we can't remember if you did this or not. So
I can't remember either. So
do it anyway.
Let's just do it.
See what happens.
Okay, quiz me.
Before we start, though. Oh. Julie's going to sing.
Oh, me? In my Miranda impersonation?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Getting to Know You.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Channeling Miranda. I'm thinking Miranda. I'm channeling her. Getting to Know You.
That's a lot less creepy than when I do it. So.
Yeah, and there were no like eyes.
I did them just like this way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I feel welcome. Thank you.
Good.
I'm being sung at. Excellent.
Kim Brown.
Yes.
Which musical character would other people compare you to?
I think, well, I would like to think in a way that I think people would compare me to Mama Morton from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
She talks tough. She's, you know, big, loud, brassy, but she's really just a big softy. But also if you scratch Mama's back, she'll scratch yours.
She's all about that reciprocity.
Oh, yes. Mm. Reciprocity.
Good love word.
Which musical character would you like other people to compare you to?
I'd actually like people to be much more scared of me, and I'd like to be Ursula from The Little Mermaid.
Yes.
With the power to transform from giant octopus into beautiful human and things like that.
And like if kids are being super annoying, you can just steal their voices.
Yep.
Can you imagine?
Souls gone.
I think you might already surpass Ursula.
Oh, look at like that. That is a big call.
When Kim Brown is in like a full rage mode.
I have not
Julie
seen
and I have
Kim.
Worked together once and it was only once, no.
Oh, no. And that's will only be once.
Actual truth. Uh-oh.
I've never seen Kim Brown in full rage mode.
Although I would actually, I know she's not really a musical character, but God, do I want to be Edna Mode from The Incredibles.
Yes!
Just all of the edges.
She's the best fiction character ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your dream role?
I have two, insofar as I have one that was always my dream, and now I'm too old and undanceable to do it, but I've always wanted to be Velma Kelly in Chicago. Chicago's one of my favourite shows, and I've always loved the music, and I loved her role, and I wish that I could dance it. So I've always wanted to do that role.
Mm. I mean, I don't think you've aged out, but yes, the dancing is the problem.
The dancing is the problem. And I don't think I could have even done it in my 20s. And we're not there anymore.
So. We could direct it in a way that Velma Kelly maybe tripped over, is on crutches for the whole show.
She just starts from a wheelchair. Yeah. Right. With lots of boys dancing around.
Her song is literally about her demonstrating all of her dance
moves.
Yeah,
but she just gets someone else to do it.
She's
so bossy. Okay.
With like a stick and a
We can make it work.
And she just points.
She's like,
left, right, left, right, 6, 2, 5, go.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I don't know. I think you could do it.
We can make it work.
I have a lot of faith in you.
We could do like retirement Chicago rather than like jail Chicago.
I love that so
much.
Where
do aged stars go?
And she just plays like a recording of
an old
show.
And they've got lawyers to try and get them out of the retirement.
Well, because they feel trapped. Like, this is not the home I was promised. And then
I'm still a star.
Instead of singing the Hot Honey Rag, they do like the nursing home Christmas carol.
Wait. She gets pregnant. What are we doing about that?
I'm just don't just squash all the ideas straight up, Julie. We're just spitballing here.
To be fair, no spoilers, but it is a fake pregnancy.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But also maybe she just thinks in her mind that she's younger than she is. It's a commentary on dementia.
I genuinely like this version more. I think it should happen.
But Billy Flynn's in there as well, and he still thinks he's a hotshot lawyer. So
he's just not
creating
an actual
drama.
Lawyer. And it's just they've set up a courtroom in the like.
Okay,
lounge.
I think we'll leave this Chicago.
Let's talk about this for an hour and 45 minutes.
Until after we stop recording.
Oh, guys, we'll fill you in.
Yeah. But Kim
Stay
Brown,
chained. Yes.
What is your favorite Sondheim show?
Anything not written by Sondheim.
Okay. So West Side Story?
Sure.
Gypsy?
Maybe.
Those are the two that aren't written by Sondheim.
The music wasn't written by Sondheim.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Look, I respect what Sondheim is.
but I just can't get
aboard it. If anything, I would probably have to go with Into the Woods if I had to at gunpoint pick a Sondheim.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
We are not holding her at gunpoint. I just need everyone to
know that. I'm just saying I would go with almost any other composer before Sondheim.
Like Wildhorn, but we'll get to that.
See, it's divisive. You're either a Wildhorn person or you're a Sondheim person, and never the twain shall meet.
So what is your go-to shower song?
It is... Maybe This Time from Cabaret.
Nice.
Mainly because it's in the mornings and I don't have a very high voice, and so maybe this time. It's nice and low to get started, and it slowly works your voice up in the morning. So.
And you just do that last verse over and over again just with that key
just
change,
the key
and
change,
it gets it up high.
It's like Beyonce, you know, and you just keep going. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. We've come to the end of the quiz. Now, I have a feeling, I have an inkling of what might be the show that you want to delete from musicals. So, what show?
Can I do a top five?
No, it's just one.
Is this where I can do a top
five? You can't delete Cats.
Okay. Oh.
Saws, man. I knew it was Cats. Right.
Even after seeing
it
can't
be
delete it.
In my top five. I actually, and I, again, having come on this podcast and sort of slammed Les Mis, I actually don't mind it. I hate it as a show. I love the music individually. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to keep it in the canon. A show that I think is overrated and dull is Rent. And I would throw that out.
Just pay
quickly.
Your rent.
Today is the best day. I love you so much, Team Benny.
Better musical than Rent. Yeah. Just wrote it.
Yeah.
It just wasn't.
It's not about Christmas,
finished.
Though.
It can be. I've not finished the musical yet.
Christmas is also in there.
Working title. You know, we'll go get there.
I'm pretty sure there's already a musical called that. Let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll start talking about The Scarlet Pimpernel. Okay, so Scarlet Pimpernel, like Les Mis, set during revolutionary France, but different revolutions.
Yes.
Very different characters, different messages, I want to say, as well.
Yes, sort of different perspectives.
So they teach very different lessons.
Yes.
So can you give us a two-minute...
Oh, I didn't realise it was
elevator
timed.
Pitch
of the plot.
I don't know that I care. That's not what I prepared. Good God. Of the plot.
Yeah. Just,
okay.
Just a really
bare
quick
bones.
Run, yeah.
Like, you don't have to go with, like, this person's called this and they pretend to be this person and they go to here, because it's very complicated. It's a very, it's a plot heavy musical.
It is. There's a lot of twists and turns. Okay. I feel like I've just stepped into an improv that I didn't know about. It's like, thank God you're here. Okay.
Thank God you're here.
Let me tell you about this show. Okay. Well, the Scarlet Pimpernel is this sort of fantasy mystical creature that nobody actually knows who he is. But
is he the Brigadoon of the Scarlet Pimpernel? Does he exist?
I don't know.
It's been timed, Julie.
And he, the Scarlet Pimpernel, seems to be able to save English nobility from the guillotine of the French revolutionists, who are just slaughtering the bourgeoisie people and trying to take back Paris and France from all of the rich people. But every time they, not every time, but a lot of times they try and kill these people, suddenly this is Scarlet Pimpernel. He turns up and he does things and he saves people and he's whisking them off back to England to save them and shelter them, and it's all very mysterious and romantic and fantastical. But we as the audience find out that the Scarlet Pimpernel is in fact an English noble by the name of Sir Percy Darnet. What's his surname? And
I really like Darnet.
Darnet.
Sir Percy Darnet.
Blakeney.
Blakeney, thank you. But he, who is very much a part of the high life, and he is very... I can't describe
foppish.
Him.
Foppish.
That's the
effeminate.
Word. Foppish. Yes, all he cares about is clothes and fashion and food and all those sort of things. So he is really a very unlikely subject. But we know that he is, in fact, and is very passionate about the issues that are going on. He also happens to have a French wife. Ooh la la. And
we all know what French wives are like, right?
Nope.
And, of course, we have our lead sort of Frenchman called Chauvelin, who is trying who is trying to catch this damned Pimpernel who's spoiling all of his guillotining fun.
That was great, Kim Brown.
With lots of music, the end.
The end.
Lots
I love it.
Lots of music. So much music in this musical.
Is it, okay, question. I've done my homework.
Clearly.
Is it sung through?
No.
Okay, just checking.
It's like
85%. I just wanted the audience to know it wasn't sung through.
A lot of Wild Horn, there's little bits of exposition and then songs about feelings.
Okay, so is the exposition almost just like recit but not sung?
No,
like,
no.
Is it that short or is it like lengthy parts?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
You completely
Everyone
understand
in the audience what's going on. I enjoyed watching it. I remember reading this book for school. I think I was in grade 6. And then we were forced to watch the movie that's now very old.
Dated.
Very, very old. And I enjoyed it. And then I saw the production that you, Kim Brown, directed and MD'd.
Shock heart, yes.
And I actually enjoyed it, but I cannot listen to the soundtrack on its own. Like, I need to see it.
That's probably fair.
Like...
There's a couple of songs in the soundtrack that even to this day I'm like, ugh, skip.
Yeah.
And it would have to be his pop ballad ones.
Yeah.
Wild Horn's very – he always throws in those songs that – like Disney that have the song that's recorded by Peebo Bryson that goes out on the radio. There's always one of those.
That grinds my gears like no tomorrow.
That's the thing. Listening to Wild Horn, it's always the Linda Etta song. Mm-hmm. It's not always sung by Linda Etta, but it is – it's like he's written it for her voice and it has to be in the musical, so it's here and it's – saying nothing, let's skip it.
That bugs me.
So, but a lot of his, I love the big chorus numbers that are in this show in particular. There's a couple of big group, big numbers that are just fabulous.
Into the Fire.
Into the Fire, yes. And Madame Guillotine is brilliant. So
I just want to, as I have admitted before, I am a Wild Horn fan because Wild Horn writes for my voice.
Yes.
So a lot of his songs I enjoy singing. I understand the restrictions of a Wild Horn piece. But I just want to say, like, he's done the Scarlet Pimpernel, but But he has a thing about these classical texts, these novellas, because he started out with Jekyll and Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went on to Svengali, The Scarlet Pimpernel. He's also done Dracula.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's also done Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yep.
He's also done Frankenstein. Yeah. So he's done like all of the classical monster
texts. Sort of gothic-y texts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Texts. Absolutely.
Well,
he's got a style, yeah. I have to say.
He has style, but it's kind of like, I guess it's your precursor to your superheroes. Yeah, it's like the first Marvel.
Well, you know, I actually read something recently that was talking about the Scarlet Pimpernel being like that yeah. sort of the facade yeah. of the superhero where there's a superhero persona and then there's the real person. Like yeah.
If you were going
Superman
to do a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen of musical theatre,
it
Scarlet
would
Pimpernel
have to be scored by Wildhorn for starters. Clearly. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think like, okay, so there's a lot of music in here. So you're a musical person.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, a show has to have the music. Like there's a lot of people love the story of a show or the characters. But yeah, for me, it's a lot of, and it's not even just the singing or the lyrics. It's actually the orchestration.
Mm.
And I love, like I'm a big fan of romantic music, Wagner, Tchaikovsky, all of those kind of really big,
the Nazis.
Loud, we don't talk about that. Music. Yeah, but they have good music.
I know. Like, I love Wagner as well, but it's problematic.
If you just take out the words and...
oh, no, it is. Oh.
Yeah. So I feel like orchestrally in particular, and like I said, with the chorus numbers that Wildhorn writes in that way, and we see that in Jekyll and Hyde as
yes,
well.
Yeah.
And... it's just, it's stirring and it's loud and it's full and it's passionate and it's fun.
I think that is one of the hallmarks of Wildhorn is the passion in the music
mm.
because he does kind of get this big swirl of emotion. Like it starts small and it works up to that. And I wish it wasn't as formulaic as after you've listened to a lot of his work, like it is like,
yeah,
this is Wildhorn.
After
I don't know what show it's from.
I knew Jekyll and Hyde reasonably well. And then, but I hadn't made the connection initially when I took on the Scarlet Pimpernel production that mm. was Wildhorn. But I was listening to it going, oh, this sounds familiar. And then after the Scarlet Pimpernel production, a friend of mine said, oh, you know, he's written one for Dracula. And so I put the CD on, I got four songs in and went, oh my God, it's the same song.
Frankenstein so, is exactly
yeah,
the same.
It's and you know what? He's found a formula and that kind of works, although does it?
That's
the question. And
yeah,
it is all very similar. But you know, when you look at just one show, like so many people love Jekyll and Hyde and a lot of the music in it. And I think it's the same. Like if you know one Wildhorn, that's enough.
Can I say, so I've got Wildhorn's basically resume of work here.
Ooh, fancy.
And so a lot, like we laugh at him, but
yes,
he
we do
works.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So starting in 1990 with Jekyll and Hyde, the next year Svengali, then he took a break until 1995 when he did two songs for the Victor Victoria musical conversion, then Scarlet Pimpernel in 97, in 98, The Civil War, in 2003, Camille Claude, in 2004, Dracula the musical, in 2005, Wedding for the Moon, in 2006, Cyrano de Bergerac the musical, in 2006, Rudolph the Last Kiss, in 2006, Never Say Goodbye, in 2008, Carmen,
stop.
In 2009, okay. Count of Monte Cristo, 2009, Bonnie and Clyde,
that's
2009, annoying. Wonderland. That's three musicals, full musicals in 1 year.
Whoa.
Then Tears
hey.
Of Heaven, Mitsuko.
Hey.
Excalibur, Death Note the musical in 2015.
It's never
he
ended.
Look, you're saying that yes, he works, but we're not saying his works are good, and that might be because
Bonnie
he
Clyde.
Churns out like three
Bonnie
of them
and
in
Clyde.
A year.
I really love.
Yes,
mm.
And Wonderland is underappreciated.
Yeah,
but
there's some really good songs
yeah.
in Wonderland, and I mean, look at Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Well, so that's the thing. I feel like Andrew Lloyd Webber did a lot of work for about a decade
yeah.
or 20 years and then just stopped and it's just, he's done.
And then he was like, ah, oh, let's try School of Rock. Ah, oh, let's botch it. Oh, well done. I'm done for another
Look
10
what
years.
I did. Yeah. Speaking of botching things.
Yes.
Are we ready for bad review?
It's, what am I going to do today? Uh-oh. Bad reviews, bad reviews, bad reviews with Julie.
Julie.
I love it. I love it so much. It's different every time.
Right.
Okay, so this is from Variety.com. The Scarlet Pimpernel, authored by – well, this is article is authored by Greg Evans on November 9th. Seek him – seek him here – seek him there.
Like, seek him. Yes, I can.
Yeah, right here. Right here. Just seek him.
Seek him. Seek him here. Seek him there. Just don't expect to really care.
Ooh.
Nan Knighton and Frank Wildhorn, Middle Brown, The Scarlet Pimpernel is a B-movie melodrama set to an adult contemporary format. Love it.
Blech.
Ooh. Oh, hang on. I'll keep reading because this could end up great. I've read this before, guys. I've totally vetted this. Lacking the gothic weight of Wildhorn's popular Jekyll and Hyde, this Les Mis light, Les Mis light, could have a tough time getting sizable audiences to step up to the guillotine, but a pleasant enough score and fanciful period costume should attract a Harlequin romance crowd.
Oh. Also, not wrong.
Not wrong. I actually can't disagree with any of that. Really?
Really?
It was nominated for 3 Tonys. It was nominated for Best Musical, Best Book, and Best Performance of Percy.
Yes.
But it didn't win.
No. It in that one year in 1998. So it opened in the October November of 97, and by the time the Tonys happened in 1998, it was nominated for a number of things, particularly Douglas Sills, who played Percy and the Scarlet Pimpernel in the first couple of iterations, was nominated a few times for his performance.
Yeah.
And the music was nominated, but unfortunately they only came away with one little award, which was a Theatre World Award for Douglas Sills in that role. So
again,
the actual show itself has not got nominated in that year only, but...
I'll say it once, I'll say it multiple times. It's still more awards than we currently have.
or the we, nomination. Collectively.
Right. Collectively.
Okay, cool. Nominations.
I have a palmy, I'm just saying.
So really we're tied. So,
tuss.
You don't.
Tuss. There's some like cool people that have been in this show. Terrence Mann played...
Yeah.
Can you say the French name again?
Chauvelin.
Chauvelin.
So, I thankfully had a friend who has spoke fluent French, and I was like, pronounce all these things. Chauvelin.
Just think chauvinistic.
Yeah.
Chauvelin.
Or think chocolat.
Or chocolat.
But not say that.
Yeah.
chauvinistic chocolate is what I'm now going to be thinking of.
So yes, I the name Terrence Mann was like, I feel like I know that name. And when I did some research, I found out that he was the original Rum Tum Tugger in Cats.
Now Julie's listening.
Julie's
back
listening.
On. Julie's back on. He's done quite a bit.
He has. He has quite an extensive resume.
He does. My favorite cast has to be the last year's Lincoln Center cast.
Oh. That had Lewis.
Norm Lewis, Laura Osnes, Tony Yazbek.
Laura Osnes was in it.
Osnes, yeah. Corey Cott, who is so good. His brother Casey's in Riverdale, also so good. and Drew Gayling, who originated the role of Dr. Pomada in Waitress. So it had quite an excellent cast.
That's a pretty, like, okay.
They're all pretty strong.
I sound a bit pervy. But that's a pretty sexy cast.
Oh, it's a totally sexy cast.
Can I say, ladies, in this show, there are about 20 characters.
500 men?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one woman.
One named woman.
This one has random Marie women. And Marguerite are the two women.
Oh, yes. Marie
listed.
Is a named character. She's sort of the...
Marie?
She's the... like the. She's not a servant, but she's like a friend of Marguerite's, just so that Marguerite actually has someone else to talk to.
Can you
the
imagine
whole goddamn show.
The actual bloodshed if those two ladies playing those two ladies were single straight females and you managed to just so happen get a cast of entirely straight males?
I mean, I would not have been sad to be Laura Osnes surrounded by Norm Lewis,
like,
Corey Cott and Drew Gayling. I'm bloodshed. Not gonna lie.
They're
like, hey guys.
Yeah.
There would be fisticuffs.
Yeah.
Any other things that we want to say about... I'm not hosting this episode, Zane. I'm so sorry.
However,
we're
anything
a team.
Anything
fine.
Else?
Well, just I was going to give you a bit of a rundown, of its checkered history. It's had a very interesting development and life with actually there's essentially four different versions of the show, and they actually have been
like a wild horn.
Yeah, they have actually been labeled like SP1, SP2. Oh, which were you in? Oh, I was in SP3. I did the tour. So the show began as a workshop, and of course, in true wild horn style, it had a concept album, and that was recorded in 1992. Mm-hmm. But the show debuted, as we said, on Broadway in sort of October, November 97. And they did a cast recording. But, of course, by the time other versions came out, that recording was quite different. But that same cast that opened on Broadway, which included Douglas Stills, I've got Christine Andreas, who played Marguerite, and Terrace Mann as Chauvelin. They did an encore album in 1999, which featured some of the – it basically was the same recording, just they'd put in a couple of new versions of songs. Chauvelin's character in particular had sort of new and I think better songs. I like the songs that he has in the other version. So a mere sort of 8-9 months of a run on Broadway, unfortunately, just before the Tonys were announced, the show was slated to close. The team changed producers, and they sort of reopened the show with
it had like a cult following, didn't it?
It did. There was this group called The League.
The League.
That sounds very ominous.
The League, or Leaguers, or something like that. Yeah. And so there were all these fans that loved the show. And so they
kind of
hit to, well, you know, terrifying. We've got like Cumberbitches and.
That's true.
Well, and also.
I love that that's a thing.
Most recently, the same thing, similar thing has happened to sci-fi, Computer in Your Head.
Be More Chill
and Beetlejuice. They kind of have these big fan uprisings and organizations trying to get them a return season.
Well, Beetlejuice is closing, so hopefully they can help it out.
That's why it's spurred.
Anyway, yes, The League managed to do something, and so the show sort of changed producers' hands, and they reopened it then with a vastly rearranged production in October 98, so that was a year after the first iteration. Douglas still stayed on for that SP2.
Yeah.
And they added Rex Smith and Rachel York into that trio of leads. Unfortunately, that show closed about 7 months later, and there was a mini...
7 months is a decent run.
It's not bad, but...
I mean, the first one was only 9 months.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So altogether, they've had a decent just in different versions. There was a little tour, and it was like a scaled-down version with three completely different leads in the summer of 99. Summer of 99. It feels weird saying years that have 19 in front of them again.
Yeah.
A third revision opened on Broadway September 99, but it closed in the January of 2000. So
are you saying that this was... restaged three times in 3 years on Broadway?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Wildhorn really wanted this show up. And then finally, SP4 was a US national tour that occurred February to April in 2000, which had numerous cast changes. Like Douglas Stills actually started the tour, but then there was three other Percys in like 4 months. So good time, everybody. And as we were saying before, Wildhorn's record of money making is not so great.
But so he keeps trying.
Look, he does not give up, and you've got to give him that.
Really appreciate that.
He's got a real go get him attitude, he does.
I mean, he did have a pretty big wing with Bonnie and Clyde.
He did very Bonnie and Clyde.
That was a long time after this.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, like it was.
That's the fact that people kept letting him try was impressive. Yes, but you know, the show has been done professionally, sort of all over the world, in different countries, and still has, you know, like a following and a fan base. It still gets done. Of course, the to do the show, I guess, as true as possible is the thing that causes everyone to downfall, because you're meant to be showing the richness and the affluence of these upper class citizens.
Tasteless affluence.
There's an entire song at the beginning of Act Two, which is about like the beauty of men, and they have a whole dance routine about hats and feathers and the cut of their pantaloons and kerchiefs and the whole jazz, and you kind of can't do that on the budget, you know. It's got to be luxurious.
But also you need 500 men.
And there's just so many men. Like, that's there's about, it's like 12 to 15 named spoken characters in Percy's entourage. You know, and then there's Chauvelin, and he's got two or three named henchmen plus all of just the French, you know, the militia, and then you've got all of your townspeople and, you know, random nobility that gets saved from
the and that's so where the women really get to shine in this
yes
show.
They get to screech on the streets of France.
Oh, is that what I heard
bastards
from the bathroom before?
Yes.
Oh my, I was in the bathroom just getting, you know, some Nurofen.
Yes.
Preparing my body for the podcast.
For the 500 men.
And I hear from
Let's
the TV some screeching. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. It, Madame Guillotine, the song, which is towards the beginning of the show, it's the first time we kind of go to France, it reminds me a bit of Sweeney Todd in that sort of, Sweeney, Sweeney. It's so screechy and high, but it's fabulous. So.
All right. Well, let's take a break.
Okay.
And we'll come back and we'll talk about all the lessons that we've learned from Scarlet Pimpernel. What have we learned from this revolutionary...
Oh, puns, Abe!
Why are we...
It's revolutionary and it's revolutionary.
I don't know that it's actually revolutionary.
The show
it's
was not revolutionary.
No.
It was a single meaning.
I'm a take
KB's
it.
Just stuck.
KB, I'm a take it. I'm a take
I'm
it.
Take
Let's
it too.
Go. Let's roll.
What I mean by revolutionary is like if you're making...
In the revolution?
Yeah, if you're making a show about a revolution, you have to pick a side of that revolution. So it's teaching us a lesson about one of those sides. So I'm very interested to hear... what you've all learned from it.
Nice dig in, Zane.
I'm on Zane's team. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm looking on that one.
I would not call this musical a
groundbreaking
revolution
or revolutionary
theater.
In that sense of the term. Okay. I guess one of the lessons I learned from the Scarlet Pimpernel is to do the right thing, even if it costs you just about everything. And I think that's a interesting sort of tale, especially when someone like Percy actually has sort of, I guess, materially everything to go and, you know, risk his life to save these people. But on the other hand, I'm like, yes, you're just saving the rich people and bringing them back to rich England.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel bad for what was actually happening in France. But, you know, beheading people in the public square is kind of a bit far. But although in this climate, maybe we should just reconsider what the French did back then. Just saying, worked for them.
well, yes.
No one actually.
Sure.
Yeah, cool.
I guess, you're not wrong.
It definitely does have.
Let's consider it.
It's, you know, it's up there with Robin Hood. I mean, it's this kind of.
There are lessons to be learned about guillotines in this musical.
There are.
And I'm not pushing you either way on what lessons you learn about guillotines from this musical. But they're there.
I learned how to build
them.
One, I can tell you that.
I learned from this end Batman that the rich guy is usually the superhero.
Yeah, no one but the English nobility would actually have ships be able to get from England to France constantly.
Constantly.
And disguises and all that jazz.
Even Robin Hood was a rich guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Look at them all.
And Iron
and
Man.
And you think it's a secret identity, guys. The more money they have.
It is always fun when you're watching a show like this where there is that secret identity and we, of course, as the audience, know exactly what's going on and watching everyone just like, come on. Like for Marguerite, she spends so long just pondering, just suddenly having this askance view of her husband going, wait a minute. Not saying I'm the Scarlet Pimpernel, but has anyone seen me and the Scarlet Pimpernel in the same room? Just it's that kind of, you just go, oh, come on.
I mean, something that this particular musical taught me when you compare it to Jekyll and Hyde and when you compare it to Les Mis is there is definitely a formula at work here.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really expand or alter either of those texts. It just kind of combines them in one and gives it to an audience. So I don't know. I'm not saying whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but like, I think the formula of how Wildhorn wrote this musical is very obvious. And so I think you can learn something from that.
Yeah. I guess what I learned from seeing your production, Kim Brown,
thank you,
is that even just being able to see a concert version of the show is better than seeing nothing.
Yeah, and I agree. And I really enjoyed doing that production because we were able to have a full orchestra on the stage. Because, like I said, for me personally, the music is so much a part of what makes this show really engaging and emotive. I don't think the audience really connects with the characters as much without the music. Yeah. I did actually read the original book in preparation for doing the show, and I found it interesting, but it was a bit tedious and kind of like, oh yeah, ho-hum. But putting that stirring music to it and giving it that tension as well was really great. But yeah, we just did it with the men were in dinner suits, the ladies were in sort of cocktail dresses, and they had like hats and sashes and accessories, and they, it was semi-stage, so you know, they acted it out, but they weren't just stand and sing to the audience. We had our guillotine and that was about it. There was no set.
And Kim, where did that guillotine end up? Do we still know where that is?
Look, I think there are people that I could talk to.
Does it? Do you think it needs sharpening at this point?
Probably. It's a bit dull. Might need a polish. Yes. So, and I think for people to for the show has not come to Australia. It's not been done. It doesn't get done a lot. I think it was a really great opportunity for audiences to just get a taste of it and go, huh. Interesting. And I actually don't think I'd want to do a production of it with the full frills and lace because, ugh, that would be so much effort. It would be a designer's dream to do that. Like if there was someone just absolutely champing to be.
Stage manager's nightmare.
Oh, yes.
Costume design.
And the fact that it flips back and forth from England, France, England, France, England. I was like, oh, my God, pick a location. You could do that in a film. You can't do that in the stage. But you can if you've got lots of money.
What I learned, like retrospectively, is that I made a really big mistake by seeing every show in that concert series apart from Scarlet Pimpernel. Whoopsie, sorry, Kim, love you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, well. Rude. Yep. I think
just and we're done.
A lesson that this musical teaches that maybe isn't the best lesson for life is that you only really need one woman in a show.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Boo with women, down with women, hate them all.
I'm just saying, like...
That humming you can hear is KB's brain about to explode.
And I don't know if it was what Zane said or that I piled on. But it was fun.
Sure.
If you don't hear me in any of these episodes, you know why.
To be fair, the way that Marguerite is kind of for the life of me, I actually can't remember how much of her character was in the book. I think she was a lot more instrumental in the book. But in the stage show, she's really there as a token. Like she has a history with Chauvelin, obviously has ended up marrying the Englishman Percy. And then he feels like he can't trust her because she's French and her brother's involved in some shady dealings, maybe. And then, of course, he's guarding himself from her because he's the Scarlet Pimpernel, and Chauvelin's trying to use her to get she's just this tiny pawn in the men's game.
And
unfortunately, even musically, she's treated that way as well, because I actually hate her songs. I'm like, here we go.
And I think that's a weakness that comes through a lot in Wildhorn's work, is that he doesn't treat women as characters. He treats them as plot points. And that's why I was kind of saying that, to make a joke of that phenomenon.
Yeah.
It was so funny saying, ha, ha, ha.
I enjoyed it. I also think a legitimate lesson that it teaches is how much nationalism used to be a part of politics. Like, we complain now that nationalism is a huge part of our politics, but the fact that he thought he couldn't trust his wife because she was from France. That is a step beyond, like, less not trusting someone who's from Saudi Arabia because they're from Saudi Arabia. Because that's putting where she's from over everything that you've ever known or done
about
with her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's treating her like a thing and not a person that you'll have a relationship with.
Yeah. Good point, Zane.
Oh,
The other little lesson that I learned is that misdirection can be useful. Because that's basically how they kind of, well, at least in the stage show, they like, hey, look over there. Whoosh, let's save this person. Run away. And then the Scarlet Pimpernel in his scarletness would just be like, ha ha, I fooled you again. Bye. So that was fun.
Here's like a man pose.
Exactly.
I mean, for better or worse, it is the tale of a superhero. It's Zorro. It is a Robin Hood. Yeah. And so I think it does have something to say about like the power of that symbol of someone who's standing up for justice when no one else really is, when normal people can't.
A more realistic version of a superhero.
Yeah, it's a superhero without any superpowers except for money.
And the fact that
again,
I think
Batman. Love it.
You know, I it's not explored in this musical, but I think because there are subsequent books like the Baroness Orczy. I don't know how to pronounce
not what
it.
I was going to say. Or,
the Baroness who wrote.
It's Hungarian. I can't.
Yeah, the
Hungarian.
Original. I apologize to everyone. I've just offended. Wrote like 10 more books featuring the Scarlet Pimpernel, and I believe that there a lot of his the Pimpernel sort of philosophy is to inspire the masses and is to inspire people to take up arms and join the cause and fight against injustice and all that sort of
revolutionary stuff.
Whereas I guess a lot of our current superheroes are very much aloof and they're not inspiring people to stand up and help their fellow man.
We will fix the problem
just
for
everybody
you.
Everybody get out of the way. You're welcome.
Sorry we killed a million of
let
you.
Let me take my shirt off is how that works.
KB,
so
thoughts?
About taking shirts off?
Is Henry Cavill playing the Scarlet Pimpernel?
Can he sing? He's in.
He's in. I think too it was... quite amazing that a woman in the early 1900s wrote it was really a series of plays and novels combined that were published and like
really
celebrated.
Widely accepted
and in the lead up especially to like World War One and all of that kind of stuff. It's pretty phenomenal that it's still.
I mean, she was a baroness.
She was a baroness.
So she did have that and kind of. She had a bit of pull.
It always says like her and her husband, like she couldn't have done it alone.
Yeah. But to be fair, that's kind of a facsimile of the Scarlet Pimpernel. Like he's a nobleman, but working for the good of the masses.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Henry Cavill, shall we take a break and come back with Dreamcast?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Are we starting with the big roles or the little roles?
I just have like a general group of men that can play whatever role they want.
Start with the bread roll.
Okay, can we just... Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's just the story of your life. On your phone, you just have a phone call. A group of men that can play any role they like.
Yeah, not just... KB just doesn't have a group of men hanging around. It's like the complete opposite. But there is a list that's like, if they want to be in the show,
they can be in any and every show forever.
Would you like some examples?
I'm very bad at Dreamcasts because I'm certainly not up with who's doing all of the things these days because I'm just slack. So I will defer to KB.
I mean, you've got your general players like Aaron Tveit, Jeremy Jordan could definitely like play the Pimpernel, play Percy.
I think Aaron Tveit would be better than Jeremy.
Yeah. It's very funny to think of like maybe people you would more often see in a contemporary role in Scarlet Pimpernel. Like, that's where my brain's having problems because I have no doubt they can do it.
I can do
it. But my brain's like, nah.
Jeremy Jordan sung, like, this amazing version of Oh, What a Beautiful Morning from Oklahoma. And, like, anyway.
And some of the other places where you'll see, like, people sing just, like, classically when you kind of are not expecting it is that backwards Broadway. And you're like, oh dang,
you have a good voice. I'd also put David Hunter in there. He's playing Dr. Pomander on the West End at the moment in Waitress. He's just a beautiful actor and has a wonderful voice. And Zach Adkins, who has played Dimitri in Anastasia on Broadway, but it's not currently. Again, just got that like, they could all play like noblemen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they have that.
Mm. You know who I'm not putting in?
Who?
Cody Simpson. Sorry, that came from the Anastasia thing. I was like,
Are you putting Zach in?
Yes, of course.
But
I mean, the Pimpernel's glove. He could probably be like the Prince of Wales, or like, you know, or Man 500.
Oh, okay, okay. So he's not worthy of like a named character.
You probably. Like, you know, we'd put him anywhere is what we're saying. Yeah. We'd just cast him is our motto. We'd cast Zac Efron. And technically, we've cast him.
Fair enough. I think a good...
He actually, if he could, I don't know what Zac Efron's French accent's like.
Yeah. Oh, probably flawless, Kim.
Stunning.
I mean, he is Zac Efron. He can do no wrong.
He can do no wrong. Yeah. There is Marguerite's younger brother. Yeah. Could be a good one. I, for the life of me, also done my research real good today. I just can't remember his name. But yeah, that could be interesting.
To be fair, as soon as I read that he did do it, Norm Lewis as Chauvelin is like perfect in my eyes. For
I mean, you
Percy,
could put like, what is it? Karamalu, what's his first name?
Ramin.
Karamalu,
yep.
That, okay, you remember the last one.
It's because it starts with K, guys. It's just easy to remember.
For Percy or the Scarlet Pimpernel, I was thinking either Matthew Morrison.
Nah, don't rate him.
to play the switch between foppish and manly, I think he can walk that line pretty well.
Yeah.
But also Jake Gyllenhaal.
I think he would own that role.
I think he'd be quite good.
Or Jonathan Groff would also play that role very well. There's a lot.
See, I think maybe not now, but a few years ago, I think Hugh Jackman could have done a good job and he would have been very marketable, obviously. Yeah. But I think he has, you know, his Peter Allen Wolverine, you know, kind of combination.
I think he would be a serviceable Chauvelin.
Yeah.
But he would be a lot worse than other people.
Yes.
Style of music requires you to sing where you're told to sing. His thing is not doing that. He likes to sing behind the beat constantly.
Yeah, all
Wild
right.
Horn.
Wild Horn just
You have a little bit of leeway with
the beat.
Wild
no,
Horn.
I refuse. I'm sorry. I refuse.
I think there's a few people that have played Javert that could do Chauvelin. Like they're sort of
not
similar.
Not Russell
Crowe. Crow.
Not Russell Crowe.
I'm less mad about that.
I said some.
Yeah, to
I
be
actually
fair.
Was thinking about Philip Quast today, and I thought, he would be divine. So and I think as an audience, you'd be like, I'm kind of on his side. Yeah. Hello.
I find myself thinking about Philip Quast like a lot more than
than maybe you should.
Than I should.
It's very good.
He is wonderful. Yeah, that's the only. See, and the girls, like, who cares?
Well, and that's the thing.
I mean,
like,
unfortunately,
they're not a big character, maybe Audra. Why not?
Look, the role of Marguerite vocally actually can go either way. And I've heard very sort of legit renditions of some of her songs. And I've also heard quite belty pop versions of her numbers as well. And I think in that sense, the character really could go either way. If you could get a really good actress in there who could actually make something out of it, I think it would make the show a lot more interesting the way that she can, because on the page it's not fantastic, but having there is room to massage something out of that, and just looks and you know, askances and all that kind of stuff could be really interesting. And I think Marguerite also works as a demure sort of, you know, in love heroine, but also as a ballsy, gutsy kind of woman as well. So I think that in that sense, almost anyone could play Marguerite. Yeah. And sure, everyone just have a crack.
And it just depends on who you cast as Percy
and
as
that's
the brother
the thing.
And
yeah,
like
it,
who is
it
she
becomes
trying to
your
fit
dynamic.
In with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's take another quick break and we'll come back with our top five lists. So if this were to appear on a top five list, what top five list would it appear?
Can I tell
on?
You, I made a list of five top five lists.
I love it.
You're welcome.
Yes. Go, number Kim. One. Go.
Number one would be shows about the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
okay.
Yes.
I don't know that we'd fill out that list, but it would
I
be
know
on.
This too.
Well, everyone else has got Les Mis on that list.
Yeah. It's it would definitely be in that list. in the top five shows that have guillotines.
Yeah.
Again, don't know if it would be lonely
I mean,
on that
is
list.
Is there a guillotine in six?
There is
like allusions to okay. what their end was, but do I don't think you ever see
it. Do we take that as?
Sure. Oh, I thought you didn't want to have to be legitimate lists.
They're not really, but sometimes we like to flesh it out.
It's number one on that list.
All right, number three.
Top five shows for lots of men.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yep, so it just is. It would. I think it's a good show for men. I think it gives them a lot to do. It's just
Maybe we could retitle it. Maybe we could call it like.
I would love to do a flipped version because that would be hilariously fun.
Wild Horns Sausage Party.
No.
No?
Sorry. No? I'm veto.
We all stopped.
I'm vetoing that.
You don't like that name?
Thank
you. No. We all just like silent. Just
I think this is a
you.
List that could actually be filled out. Top five shows about French people where no one speaks French.
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Les Mis.
Like there's, and again, there's been versions where people have sung in French accents and spoken in French accents.
Hamilton.
And then... But they're just speaking English. And like I get that doing Les Mis in full French would probably be a very different show. And maybe not as marketable. But it just there's not even like random French words. They don't even say bonjour. They don't there's nothing. At least Beauty and the Beast says bonjour.
Yeah.
You know,
like, at least, to be honest, Beauty and the Beast is probably the most French musical.
Because they say bonjour, 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 bonjour.
Yes.
There's a whole
That's how it. Sad that list is.
So I thought, that's... And my number five on my top five list of top five lists is shows with sword fighting.
Yeah.
More sword fighting.
I was going to put it on that list as well. Yeah, yeah, fencing musicals.
Delightful choreographed sword fighting.
Oh, mate, we had so much... When I did it, the lovely Glenn Schaefer, who played the Scarlet Pimpernel Percy for us...
Who played our Gaston, so just saying.
I know.
Full circle.
All the French. Is actually trained in fencing, sword Amazing. Fighting. And so he procured some practice swords for us, and he taught all the guys how to do stage sword fighting.
That's awesome.
And he choreographed all of our sword fights. Funny story, sidebar. So we only did three performances. We did like a Friday night, Saturday afternoon, and Saturday night. Between Friday and Saturday, he managed to dislocate his shoulder and didn't tell me. Which is good because I was conducting the show and probably would have fainted at some point if I'd found that out. But just switched hands.
What?
So he did all his stage fighting for the matinee with his left hand instead of his right hand and ran it with the people that he had. He just like, oh, let's just run it. But he was ambidextrous in sword fighting. There you go. Fun fact.
Wow. Okay.
I found out after the production. Glenn, I was like, what?
If
what
you're listening.
You're amazing.
Yeah, you've just gone up a notch. You're welcome.
Here's a gold star.
I would put this on top five Wild Horn.
I was going to say surely definitely. It makes the
it's,
top
it's, it's probably number five. I'm going to say that.
I would have put it five.
A fun fact that I haven't actually mentioned in this. I own the score to this. Never seen the musical. Never bothered to play through it. Unsure why I own it.
I will buy it.
Did
off you
just pick
I'll just
it up?
Okay, great.
You can have it.
Stomach. It was just lying around at Ignatius one day. I'd put it on top five superhero musicals.
Yeah.
Because the others haven't done well either.
Was so great.
So why not put it in equal company?
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Would you call Peter Pan a superhero musical? Peter Pan has superpowers. He's a leader. Yeah. He's sticking up for the little guy.
I would put it more as a fairy tale musical.
Yeah,
fair
Question
enough.
Mark.
Look,
I don't know that Peter Pan would make the top five superhero musicals.
No, I was just wondering because, like, Scarlet Pimpernel is technically not a superhero.
No,
he's more of a
true.
Spy or a double agent.
I mean, he's probably the superhero before we knew we could have superheroes.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, the actual story of the writing of the Scarlet Pimpernel stories does read like
a
comic book precursor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, for the purposes of today, why not put Peter Pan on there? We've got Spider-Man.
We've made so many accommodations today already. Let's just go with it.
Adventures the musical will come out eventually.
God, please.
Endgame the musical. And they snap their fingers and everyone disappears out of the theater.
Bane's like, please.
I'm cancelling this podcast. That's it.
We are done.
Well, this is the one you're cancelling.
Yep.
Okay.
Do you know what, Zane? I said Mean Girls, the musical, so many times in 10 years that it eventually happened. I talked about last year in detail how I would write The Nanny, the musical, happening.
And
I've now said Endgame, the musical, watch out. It's about to happen.
That's why I'm cancelling the podcast.
Do you know what's scary? This is a new talent of hers, and everything she says comes true.
Now we need to write a musical about it so that that can go on our superhero musical list.
It's not going
to
happen unless Katie says
we found two Harry Potter books when I said we would. Austin Butler and Vanessa Hudgens broke up just after I said they would. It's all very scary.
All right, well, before KB says anything
you're a superhero,
else,
I think
we need to say goodbye.
Aw.
Goodbye.
Kim, do you have anything to plug coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Or months. Well, I was going to say, this year is exciting, but 24 Hour Musical is happening again. We are in our fifth year. It is super exciting.
It's a big one.
It is a big one, and it's going to be a little bit different, a little bit fun, and I think people should get on board if you have not already.
It's rounding out the top five list of best 24 Hour Musicals.
It will. We will have
but
a top five list.
Next year we'll have to work out what
which
happens.
One was the worst.
The first. No, it was great. I love Cinderella.
I'm also doing The Wizard of Oz with Savoyards later in the year. So that's
wonderful.
A bit later on, but I'm very excited about that too.
Excellent. Well, and if you want to find out more about us, you can find us on Twitter or on Facebook or on Instagram. Musicals Teach Me or Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. You can find us on our website at thatsnotcanon.com/musicals taught me everything I know or MTMEIK. And also we have a Patreon if you want to become one of the best people in the entire world.
Like Kim Brown.
This is where you get to hear those exclusive Patreon only episodes that we release once a month. They're lots of fun and a lot looser than our usual episodes. So send us an email at musicalstaughtmepodcast@gmail.com if you want KB to have a chat to you about anything that you've got to say to us.
I like that KB handles the outgoing and I handle the... Wait, no.
No, the incoming.
I handle the outgoing. Yeah. KB handles the incoming.
I just read them. I'm like, what a great email.
The
Julie.
And we'll be back same time next week with another musical. Thank you so much for joining us,
My
Kim.
Pleasure. Thanks
Kim.
For having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, KB.
Thank you, Zane C. Weber.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Zane C. Weber.
And thank you for listening, everyone who is doing that thing. Bye.
Bye.
Disney vs. Disney Debates podcast is all about finding the answer to one simple question. What is the best Disney movie of all time? Maybe the question isn't that simple. So join us every Saturday as hosts from all across That's Not Canon fight for their movies in one-on-one debates moderated by me, Zane C. Weber, in order to decide once and for all which of Disney's beloved classics or recent hits will take the crown.
Mine.
Save it for the show. Available now on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you find podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.